Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Open Book, your weekly spiritual book club. I'm Lori Strawn, and with me, as always, is my good friend, Alice Shelton. Hi, Alice.
Hi, Lori. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Today, our show is about a poem by George Herbert called Prayer 1. It's not the sort of poem that I generally gravitate toward because I prefer contemporary poetry, and George Herbert, an Anglican priest, was anything but. He lived from 1593 to 1633, but his poetry is so rich and full of lovely symbolism, I just couldn't resist. So here is Prayer. Prayer, the church's banquet, angels' age, God's breath in man returning to his birth, the soul in paraphrase, heart in pilgrimage, the Christian plummet sounding heaven and earth, engine against the Almighty, sinner's tower, reversed thunder, Christ's side piercing spear, the 6 days world transposing in an hour, a kind of tomb which all things hear and fear, softness and peace and joy and love and bliss, exalted manna, gladness of the best, heaven in ordinary, man well-dressed, the Milky Way, the bird of paradise, church bells beyond the stars heard, the soul's blood, the land of spices, something understood. Well, what we're going to do is just take this poem a line or two at a time and see what we can make out of the imagery, both in context of the poem and as it relates to our own prayer lives, I guess. So, okay, Alice, how is prayer, quote-unquote, the church's banquet, angel's age?
Well, I should have known you'd start at the beginning where I had the harder time. I had to get, like, to the third line before I could really make quick sense of it. Angel's age drags something from me. And I think it's angels age, like, in some ways that could be the simplicity of prayer, like a child angel, the complexity of prayer for a wise, old, long-lived, experienced angel. And I don't know if that's even close to the way you are imagining that or thinking about that. Church's banquet, to me, all are welcome. It's a safe place. It's a place to bring yourself. It's not a place to be afraid of. It's warm. Those are my thoughts. What are yours?
I'm with you on those. Yeah. The church's banquet, prayer is, you know, obviously one of the greatest gifts of spirituality, and it provides us with sustenance for our souls. As for the church's aspect, I can see prayer is primarily transmitted generationally through a church, although I don't think of it as really as organized faith domain. I think in a way that we would pray even if we were never taught to pray. Strange as that sounds. As for angels' age, I'm with you. Prayer could be understood as a time or age fit for angels, in that it is uplifting and purifying, and it raises the human soul above its normal status.
Yep. Yeah, if it had said the age of angels, I would have had a sense of it as a place in time. Or maybe it is the age of the angels, the time of the angels, a way of the way angels communicate. It's possible. That was then I was trying to think back to the time period in which this was written and the understanding of angels, and I then didn't get further down that route, but that was kind of where my brain was going.
Okay, well, moving on. How is prayer God's breath in man returning to his birth?
Well, I had a lot of really kind of deep Lenten image there, and just thinking about that was mostly returning to his birth or returning to ashes. I don't know where that came from, but that's just kind of my initial reaction. But also, just prayer as breath to me has always had meaning, and thinking about God giving us breath and taking it back to that very basic place of existence, which can be kind of a birth image. So that's where that took me. I was drawn to that. I liked that.
Yeah, me too. And I went to the same place you went, kind of the, you know, God making man out of dust. God breathes the life into humans, and in prayer, we return that breath of life through our words up to heaven. So it's sort of, you know, like the water cycle, only more spiritual.
Yeah, that's really, it's a good way to think about it.
Well, okay, the next line is the soul in paraphrase, pilgrimage. Do you relate these images to your life at all?
Yeah, these are my two favorites. These are the two that connected the most to me. The soul in paraphrase has such a nice ring to me because it speaks about, sometimes I think I've talked to you about, I hide things from God, or I don't speak with true honesty or clarity, and then I have to say to myself, inside myself, okay, hello, God knows what you're saying, so, you know, so in some ways, I'm kind of paraphrasing, but it speaks to me of an intimacy, you know, when you have private words or secret jokes, or that's kind of the imagery that I'm thinking of, that I don't have to, I can paraphrase with God. My soul can communicate and pray and talk with God in any way I want, and God understands the meaning of what I'm saying, be outside of any crazy words or whatever I'm trying to say. So I thought that was beautiful.
Yeah.
And then the heart and pilgrimage, I just have always resonated to the concept of pilgrimage since I went on one more than 10 years ago now, and came to really understand that it's about place, but it's not about place. It's about people, but it's not all about people. It's about being present and experiencing something and walking along a journey with intention and paying attention. And so the heart in pilgrimage then, to me, just implies this vast openness and peace and just really beautiful imagery.
Yeah, I'm with you. And the thing to me is, I guess, you think, just on the face of things, of prayer as sort of internal. But as you say, there is an element, a pilgrimage element to it, about journeying and getting out of your own way and finding words to express yourself. And that is a journey outward in many ways.
Well, and I think you and I, because we both write, I think have sort of a special or unique understanding of how writing can speak to both of these things, and how writing in and of itself, in my mind, is really pilgrimage. I went back this morning and just by total happenstance and opened a journal of some writings that I had done last year, and it was so cool. It was like looking at a roadmap of what has been my last year. It was written a year ago, of changes I'd noticed in myself and sort of directions and feelings that have just really come true this year. So it was like looking back at part of a pilgrimage that I have been on. So it's kind of cool.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. So did you learn anything in particular from reading it, or was it just more of a sense of seeing the distance you've come?
You know what? I kind of remember the day I wrote it, and I remember it was written in an almost wishful way of, this is the way I wish my life to be. These are feelings that I wish I could figure out how to have, peace and things like that, and slowing down and taking life a little more easy. And so it was almost like, you know, you say if you build it, they will come. If you write it, it can happen, you know. So it was sort of foreshadowing almost. It was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very. Well, okay, the next couple of images are maybe a little bit trickier. How do you see prayer in the Christian plummet sounding heaven and earth, engine against the Almighty, sinner's tower?
I think summarizing it, I would just say it's the way we are wrestling with God in prayer. Even in our prayer, we're asking, we're barraging. A priest once described little children going to confession as like being hit with popcorn. You know, it's kind of like this almost human cry or scream piece. Is that how you read that?
Yeah. Well, the first image I thought more of, for some reason I came back to like Mark Twain, the relation of plumbing the depths of a body of water. You know, a measurement of the extent of something. Faith, soul, need, delight, and prayer plumbs those things and plumbs heaven and earth as it brings to expression our worldly and otherworldly thoughts and feelings and desires. So that was me going to water there. But Sinner's Tower, I understand in that I think prayer elevates us, even in our very deepest sinfulness, to a state of being that is nearer to God. And Engine Against the Almighty, I can only understand this image in not so much an opposition, sort of a rubbing against the grain, but a way of stirring up attention that way, in the way that like a baby's cry stirs up attention. God doesn't need prayer, but God listens to us anyway. Because of the medium of prayer.
Yeah. We need prayer.
We need prayer.
Yeah. Well, can I go back to the Christian plummet? Okay.
Sure.
Because you're using the word plumbing, to plumb something, or to plumb.
Or to plumb the depths.
Plumb the depths. And see, I'm reading that as a plummet, as a fall. The Christian plummet of, like, the descent of the Christian.
But I think you're hitting right on the nub of it. The fall, during the fall, we separated ourselves from God, and prayer is our way of bridging that gap, in a way.
Mm.
Just
thinking
off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But I think you can read more than one sense into it. Yes, the word is plummet, but when I think of that word, it sort of expands for me into other territories, and I don't know that's technically not what the author meant to do. He could have chosen another word. He could have chosen the word fall. But plummet, I don't know. It's a little bit different.
Yeah, and it is a very precise word, which I think that's one of the beauties of this. Just there are some just lovely words selected in it, which is nice.
Yeah, and the word sounding, I guess, was the thing that made me think to sound the depths of something. Well, what about reversed thunder and Christ's side-piercing spear? I thought those were really kind of negative, but with more attentive reading, I think I understand them a little bit better. What do you think about them?
Well, I'm anxious to hear your side, because reversed thunder to me had some attraction.
Why so?
It was like I was envisioning, and I did try to be kind of visual with this, just because, I don't know, you mentioned the word what images, so that to me is visual.
Sure.
So you don't see thunder. You hear thunder.
Right.
And so the reversing of it, and thunder to me is a very strong power. But I'm trying to think how I want to say this. It's like sucking me up toward heaven, you know?
Ooh.
So that's,
I like
it's
that.
Just, it's an odd thing, but that's how it felt to me.
Yeah, I think of it as sort of well, especially, well, I guess I don't know what they knew in those days, but you think of thunder as a loud sound coming from the heavens, whereas prayer is sort of this loud sound going up from the earth
to
the
heaven.
Heavens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And as
and
the,
I think
the Christ side-piercing spear bit, the only way I can understand that is that I think my prayers are painful to God sometimes because I'm ridiculous or foolish or I'm not seeing things clearly or because God just understands that I'm hurt or disappointed or sad and feels it with me as sharply, if not more sharply, than I do.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think this is some language too intended to tie, just to tie things into Christ and into the resurrection and the crucifixion and the whole process of, I don't know, Easter. I mean, you know, I think that's part of the intent here.
That we are sort of complicit in that act,
mm-hmm.
you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that sin is, you know, sin, which I think is mostly what people are praying about. I mean, we're praying for requests and things like that, too. But prayer forgiveness in particular for sin is connected right into Christ dying for our sins and our participation in the crucifixion. So
that's true. Very much so. Well, what about the 6 days world transposing in an hour? How is prayer like that?
Well, isn't that, to me, that's like almost that prayer can flip creation. It can be a way of creating anew. It's just a way of turning upside down maybe even the life you've created for yourself in time by your sinful behavior. I don't know. That's creation is definitely in that. It's just one way of pulling it out. What did you think
I
on that?
I really love what you just said because the word transpose, it means to move around. And I thought, how is the 6 days world moving around in an hour? I mean, I can think of it as sort of a paraphrase of, you know, prayer as summation of our current feelings. But to transpose as moving around, it is. It's about reordering our lives in a way. In prayer, and often ending up in a better place than when we started, I guess.
Yep, I think so. And I think it speaks to some of my thoughts about co-creation and that, you know, this isn't all just a bunch of puppets on a string. This is not just, we are not predestined. We have some choice and we have some action and we have some responsibility in creation and how the world ultimately lives out and is created, you know? I mean, yes, I think God created the world, but I don't think that was just a finite, ended process. So I think that's part of what's happening here.
Yeah, very important to remember. Well, the poem goes on to say that prayer is a kind of tune which all things hear and fear. All things? I mean, now we're going to go back to our humanities class again. Do animals pray? Does nature pray?
Well, I would say that all those things are prayer, just like I think human lives are prayer. So is there a conscious, recognizable act of prayer that is similar to what you and I might think of as prayer? But, you know, then you look at the examples of St. Francis of Assisi's one, you know, our work should be prayer. Everything we do should be prayer. And so if you look at it that way, all of creation is prayer.
Yeah. Yeah, leaves turning in the autumn is prayer. Animals hunting for their daily food is prayer. Living their lives as God created those lives to be lived, I guess, could be prayer.
Yep. I mean, Laura, you and I are still, even though I think we try, we are still bringing kind of the human dominion over all other forms of nature into how we're reading this. You know,
of
I think
course.
That's just one of the human places of sin, that we really do see ourselves as having dominion over all other creation. And the Sisters of Providence, I still am grappling with it, but that's one of the things that I've started to kind of undo in my mind as I've thought about the cosmos and all that stuff that they're in, is that, you know, there's still a presupposition that we are in charge of ecology, that we are in charge of all the things that are happening, and that we should have dominion over those things, and that's maybe not really the way.
No, and when I think about it, you know, having had cats all my life, I've seen more than one of them pass away. And yeah, if there's pain in that time, that's generally reflected. But there's no existential terror the way human beings have about mm-hmm. death. And I think a lot of people would say, well, that's because animals are dumb and they're less than we are. But maybe they know things innately that we don't know. How do we know?
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, they may have a far more balanced sense of their right place in creation that we have lost because we have so mm-hmm. placed ourselves in a place of dominion and in a place of
right.
being superior.
Right, because of the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Well, capital T, capital F.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The fall.
Well, the next couple of images, moving on, are a little more comforting. Softness and mm-hmm. peace and joy and love and bliss, exalted manna, gladness of the best, heaven and ordinary man well-dressed. Mm-hmm. How is prayer like a man or woman well-dressed?
I think it's sort of, you know, there are lots of different prayer forms. And so that type of prayer that comes to my mind when I think about it would be prayer of thanksgiving, prayer of happiness and gratitude for creation. You know, not a bunch of ASCII stuff. It's sort of like, I'm so glad and proud to be human, and I'm so gifted and thankful for all the things that I've been given, and so I'm going to use the gifts to the best of my ability. I mean, that's the image that comes to me for those. I like the pace of how this specific stanza was written. It's just very upbeat, uplifting.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know about you, but I struggle a lot of times with prayer in that the words are too feeble. The words are not inclusive enough. The words can't mm-hmm. say what's in my heart and in my soul in a way that's adequate. And that can
mm-hmm.
be really frustrating to me.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I'll hit on something, I'll say something in prayer, and I'll think, yes, that's it. That's me at my best. That's me at my most poignant and expressive and grateful and as my truest self, in a way. And that's
mm-hmm.
what I think about when I think of this man well-dressed image.
Mm-hmm. And are those your words that you have, and this kind of talks a little bit about just how you pray, but are those conscious words that you are thinking and speaking during prayer, or as you're, I mean, where are you coming up with these words that feel perfect? Do they feel just inspired and they just show up, or have you written them, or what?
Just appear and show up, but what you're saying in a way is leading me to think, oh yeah, they're not really mine at all, are they? You know, it's God's breath moving through, and I'm simply allowing that breath to move through me unimpeded, and that is what's coming out is so beautiful.
Yeah, I think, and I understand you. I'm just thinking of the more and more times I find myself as I'm praying, when I'm really, maybe I'm crossing the threshold from prayer to contemplation, which is really the listening piece,
mm-hmm.
when I'm just finding myself content to just say, Lord, I don't even have the words. I just know
yeah.
you know how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, is that prayer, is that contemplation, or is that the transitional point? I don't know. Or does it matter?
No, I don't know. I don't know if it matters. It's communication. And
yeah.
even if the communication is, I don't know what to say, that's
yeah.
at least something.
Yeah. Yeah. Or even sometimes, you know, I just will say the emotion I feel. Lord, I am afraid. And
mm-hmm.
I just need you to, you know, if sometimes I need to name the fear, sometimes I don't. But, you know, that's enough for me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the last few images take us kind of further away. The Milky Way, the bird of paradise. church bells beyond the stars heard, the soul's blood, the land of spices, something understood. The poem sort of seems to imply a nearness and a farness about prayer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
Well, I think the whole progression of it really begins, it begins in my mind with a very personal, in almost interior thing, and then kind of, it's almost like watching incense rise as it builds. And it'd be interesting to know if that was George Herbert's intent or if that's just my reading into it. So the images grow ever closer to God in some ways, closer to what I would think of as heaven. The land of spices brings to mind something distant, very rich, very almost decadent. Does it bring that image to your mind?
Yeah, it does. And I think it sort of shows the dichotomy of prayer as immediate and direct and intimate, but also as sort of mysterious and ethereal. Because, I mean, we're speaking to God. We're speaking. We
yeah.
are speaking to God. It's sort of unfathomable in a way. It's more unfathomable even than the bird of paradise or the land of spices would be to an Anglican minister stuck in gloomy old England in the 17th century. You see
yeah.
what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is, to me, this parts of this poem feel very high church to me. I mean, some of the words that are used, you can see that, because I think of Anglican service as being really high church. Lots of symbolism, lots of candles, bells ringing, incense. And I get that feeling from this. That there's a formality to it,
mm-hmm.
but there's also a very personal side to it. And I don't know quite how to articulate that or show you where in the poem that makes those feelings come. But it, especially as you pull it apart as we have, you get that feeling
mm-hmm.
of both formality but also very personal, which I think is very much of God.
Yeah.
I mean,
the word I would use is longing. That's what I feel
mm-hmm.
in it, is longing.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah, it's very personal, which I didn't get at first read, but as you read through this and you begin to maybe personalize your own reaction to it, I can almost imagine his writing of it and some of the emotions he had. I wonder how long it took him. I wonder if it was a real labor or if it just came. I would love to know that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting that it's not the only prayer that he wrote about, or the only poem he wrote about prayer. And that's the, you know, kind of the wonderful thing, that he hadn't exhausted the subject yet, even
mm-hmm.
with all of these images.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it hard to think back that people who lived when he, I mean, we kind of think we invented prayer in a way, even though we read about it in Scripture. But, you know, it is kind of funny to think about some of the, it, I mean, prayer is just an ancient practice. And we're still not understanding it, and we're still
yeah.
not finding the right words for it. Isn't that interesting?
It is, and it kind of brings back that thought of, is prayer innate? Is it something that's built into us, that's like knit into our genetics
mm-hmm.
in some way?
Mm-hmm.
If no one taught you to pray, would you pray?
I bet there have been studies done on that. And what falls into the category of prayer? What is prayer? What isn't prayer?
That's
you know?
True. We could go on and on.
Unfortunately, yeah.
time is ticking down. So that's it for this week, folks. I hate to say it, but it's true. We hope that something that you've heard will spark your own prayer life, or at least make you think about the power of prayer in your life. Next week, we'll go on to something new and different, and we hope you'll be here with us. Until then, if you're looking for God, just open a book.
Have a great week.